you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And back in May, when COVID-19 was still the dominant force in the news cycle, I had the chance to talk to 2 people from the Atlanta History Center, where their entire team has been finding ways to capture information and artifacts related to the pandemic to ensure that future generations have access to a really robust record of this unique time.
We mentioned this collection project pretty briefly in one of our previous episodes, but Holly got in touch and asked if they would like to talk at more length about this effort, as well as what it's like to figure out how to keep a living history museum going and fulfilling its whole mission when you have to be closed to the public.
And so this first interview is with Sheffield Hale, the president and chief executive officer of the Atlanta History Center. And Sheffield and I talked about everything from the History Center's living collection to how the pandemic is going to impact the way workforces function in the future. So here is Sheffield. So Sheffield, my co-host and I have spoken on the show about the points where each of us realized that this pandemic was happening at a level that was going to directly impact our daily lives. But I'm curious what that moment is like from an institutional perspective, where staff and community are significant factors to think about. Like, when did you realize that this was going to fundamentally change business operations for the History Center?
I guess it's probably the Friday that we closed that I finally realized it. It was sort of like a slow motion roll of watching this happen across the country, watching other museums, not wanting to be the first, not wanting to be the last, trying to gauge public opinion of the safety of your staff first. And it reminds you a little bit of a when we see a bit of snow coming, right, for a snow day.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure it out and you're watching what everybody else is doing. And then all of a sudden there's this big rush and everybody gets in their car and they leave and there's a traffic jam. Well, that's what happened in terms of people closing.
Did the History Center already have a disaster plan in place? I know they have them in place, but one that would cover a situation like a pandemic? Or did you guys have to put a plan together to deal with this kind of as it was happening?
Well, we did it on the fly in some respects. We had a plan for remote working because we had a plan that the campus was closed. It wasn't because of a pandemic, but it could have been because of power outages, which we have a lot of in Atlanta. because in a lot of trees around there, or a tornado or hurricane, some extended period of time, or there had been, you know, a loss of a building. So we had, you know, redundant systems for all the technology, for all everything that we store, all of the data, the information that we have. We had all that. So it really worked well for a pandemic, because what all that is working remotely. And so we operated on the fly. It's, you know, we went to, you're going from 70 to zero. and then it's like, well, we can all work from home. Now, what do we do?
Right.
And how can we be productive? And that was what we had to really improvise at the time. And I'm really pleased and proud of what came out of it.
What are the steps involved for closing a place like the History Center for an unknown period of time? Because there are a lot of different types of collections there. There are a lot of events that happen there, et cetera. What preparations have to be made so that everything can be taken care of when most of the staff is not on site?
So the events started, you know, canceling one after another. There are a few, you know, weddings that were in May that it took a while for people to reach reality in terms of, you know, acceptance.
Of course.
You have to go through the stages of grief there in June. But we were able to work through all those and rebook most of those. And most everybody was understanding about that. In terms of the museum itself, we've got to keep it, we got to keep the security. We've got to keep the humidity, the air conditioning and all that going on for the artifacts, both in our archives, but also in the museum itself, our historic houses. Then we have living collections. We have goats and sheep and turkeys and Rhode Island Red chickens that all have to be fed. And they have to, stalls have to be cleaned. All that has to happen during the pandemic. And then we have the other living collections, all of the flowers and plants that have to be tended to. So we had to work out a way for our gardeners to be socially distant when they were, you know, coming back and use their own tools. I mean, we went through this whole elaborate criteria of, you know, looking around the country and at other botanical gardens to figure out what they were doing.
Were there any special things that you had to do for the living collections? I'm very worried about the animals. I want to make sure they're all good.
Well, we made sure we had redundancy in terms of who knew how to feed them and how much mm-hmm. and when, and that they didn't meet each other. And that, you know, we went through all of this elaborate, you know, you bring your own lunch, you know, bring your own tools. Don't use anybody else's tools. So a person can use this cart or that cart. These bathrooms are designated for each of you.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, it's because it's certain group here, certain group there. So if one group got infected, that wouldn't impact the other group.
Right.
And so we spent, you know, a lot of time figuring that out. And a lot of it's on the fly, and we hadn't been through this. But, you know, that's the great thing about having friends all over the country and learning from them. And even friends across the street, you know, the Atlanta Botanical Garden, just down the road.
So in my head, I'm picturing this wild spreadsheet of who can be where, when, and use what thing. But I may be overthinking that one.
No, you're not, unfortunately.
I hope you're preserving that wild spreadsheet as part of the historical record, actually. Like, I legitimately do, because that's one of those things people don't think about that seem maybe mundane and not really part of a pandemic prep, but that's part of how we all get through, right?
This is the green potty and this is the red potty, right?
Right. What has been the hardest part of all of this? You said you had planned for work from home for very temporary closures, like a power outage, but this is a temporary closure that is longer in length and probably larger in scope than you guys normally have. What's been the biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge and the biggest hit long term is going to be financially, you know, because if, you know, we had all of these events planned that are as part of our revenue in the spring and the early summer is a peak time, you know, for both weddings and other events. And that went away. Now they've been rescheduled, but they're in another fiscal year and they may or may not happen. And if they do happen, they probably happen in smaller groups. So we're having to budget next year based on that. The Swan House Ball has now been postponed till September. We hope we'll be able to have it then. We may not. We don't know. our biggest event, honoring, you know, LeVette Russell, who's just one of the great humans in Atlanta. So that, you know, threw us out. And, you know, but all those things, and then admissions and the school tours and all those things interrupted just zero. So on the revenue side, you had that. Now, what we did realize is that we could continue to do our mission in the interim remotely. And, you know, the whole mantra about do not waste a crisis, I bought into that. I'm, you know, completely say, okay, if we're going to be closed, we're going to accomplish a lot. Let's get everything that's done that's on my list now. We have no excuses. You know, we're working on a new strategic plan. We've got an interpretive plan, collections plan, collecting plan. Finish them. Now's the time. No more excuses. What can we do in terms of our backlog of veterans' oral histories? Let's put the as many people as we can on transcribing those. And so people from the front desk, people, you know, who are helping in that area, were now transcribing oral histories. And then another group is proofing them, the transcriptions. So we're doing those kinds of things. And the educators who are supposed to be dealing with school kids are now producing videos that we put up online for kids to be able to do activities at home. And we'll have those forever. So a lot of that we are able to capture in the last, you know, 2 months of the year. But to make sure that we use the time as effectively as possible. And I've made sure that when I first got here, one of the senior people said, Sheffield, why are you always in a hurry? And I've learned that folks in the history world, a lot of times historically, have worked on Jurassic time. I came out of, you know, I'm a lawyer, right? So I came out of, you know, 6 minute increments on timesheets and dealing with that. And every minute counted. And then I was at the American Cancer Society, and we were in a hurry to try to cure cancer, and I'm mission driven. And so, you know, we're in a hurry, and so we're in a pandemic. Great. Now we have time to clear out all that crap that you say you don't have time for. We're going to get it done, and we're going to have time to think, and it's going to be great. And guess what? It has been very productive. And the big surprising thing is how busy we've all been.
Yeah.
You know, I try to cancel some meeting and just say, well, will you reschedule it for an hour? I mean, they're booked all day, you know, and I understand. It's like, damn, you know, and you'll get off of these damn Zoom meetings at, you know, the end of the day. So where did it go? So it's been really fascinating that way.
That is really interesting. I mean, I feel like we have had kind of the same experience in our podcasting. But a lot of that has been because we all started working from home, setting up our own little mini studios and stuff. So we're one of the few kind of media outlets that didn't have to really miss a beat in terms of transition. But it's interesting to hear how quickly your team made that shift and found themselves perhaps busier than ever getting through all of these projects. That's probably got to feel great to get that to-do list checked off.
Yeah, I have another list, though.
Uh-oh. Sheffield is a whipcracker.
It is going to feel great, and we are making real progress, and we have made some. You know, we've had a few minor epiphanies along the way, and it's been great.
Now you are, of course, in charge of this large facility and all of its people and its living collections, etc. And how do you balance out managing all of the needs and logistics of the History Center with the needs of yourself and your family at a time that is weird and unprecedented and stressful in ways I think none of us can really prepare for?
You know, it has been a lot more stressful, and it manifests itself in different ways than I anticipated. And it partly because the weather has been so good and everything has been so beautiful. It's been so surreal. You step outside and you say, we can't be in a pandemic. It's just too nice. So the whole Groundhog Day effect can wear on you. You know, I was practicing law, you know, for a long time, and I'm used to highly stressful situations. I'm used to, ignoring my family and being a bad father. The good news is that, you know, nobody's home anymore. They're all, you know, in their late 20s and early 30s. And it's just myself, my wife, and my dog, Baxter, who's very thrilled to have me at home all day long. So it's been interesting. I've actually been able to see more of my children because we, you know, we feel comfortable, you know, having a mini quarantine pod, but they're not living under my roof.
Right. Is the History Center looking back at like their historical knowledge and research about pandemics? This is not the first pandemic to happen, to kind of help both the center and the community understand the trajectory of this one and like contextualize what we're living through right now?
Well, you know, the first thing that we are doing is we're beginning to collect in real time, you know, with our Corona Collective. And a part of that's reflective of the fact that you look in our collections, there's not much from the 1918 pandemic and flu pandemic. And the couple reasons for that, one, we were founded in 1926. But the main reason is that people didn't keep ordinary items from that time because it was something they got through and they wanted to move on. And also it was the end of the First World War. And, you know, there were other things going on at the same time. And people just wanted to push through it. So I think there were a lot of, you know, learnings. There's a lot of history that's in the newspapers and other places that you can go back and read about. But you're not hearing as much about what happened to ordinary people that might be more instructive as to how, for example, practices may change in the future as a result of this. We all assume that, you know, our world has changed forever and we're not going to go back to certain practices. Well, we don't necessarily know that, but probably true in many areas, but we can't predict the future. All we can do is collect the present and then let other people gather in 20 or 30 years and say, oh, that's when that happened. That's when they finally got clean bathrooms.
What has been the biggest surprise in all of this for you? Because there have to have been things that just took you completely off guard.
Well, first of all, that remote working worked as well as it has, or seems to have. I've always been a skeptic about that, unless somebody was a peace worker or a lawyer, you could count their hours that they spent doing something or, you know, tasks that was performed in an area where there's not anything necessarily tangible to be delivered. It's hard to manage remotely and feel like you're in charge in a traditional way. I think a lot of those prejudices are breaking down and that you're seeing people are actually very effective working remotely and can get a lot done. And I don't think we're at the end of the office yet, because I do think there's something about being able to have some camaraderie and be with other people, and you can accomplish a lot that way. And then there's a lot of your identity that way, but it won't be, it probably won't be the same. And if you could get a troglodyte like me to believe that remote working works, I mean, it must be, you know, really taken off.
It's interesting to think about how this moment will be perceived in terms of workforce by future generations. Lastly, because you are, you know, the head of an organization that takes care to manage, you know, information about the past and use that, you know, as a form of education and as part of community building, I wonder what you're hoping we will all take away from this experience when it's part of our history.
You know, what we try to do at the Atlanta History Center is connect people, history, and culture. And what we're trying to do is to let people get some perspective, connectivity to their own community and somebody people's other ideas, and connect them to the city somehow through history. I think what this pandemic has shown is that we're really all connected together in so many ways, and that we really need to understand that, you know, in terms, it's biological, it's spatial, you know, what's with these, you know, the virus shows how interconnected we are and how dependent we are on each other, and that we can't just, you know, all drive into our little cul-de-sacs and sit in our great room and ignore each other. And we actually have to come out onto the street and be able to interact with each other in a positive way that shows that we respect the fact that somebody else is entitled to be there as well. It's not just about us. And I think like a lot of people are going to learn that from this pandemic. But, you know, people have a way of learning things and quickly forgetting them.
This is true. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Will be a lesson that sticks. Sheffield, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you always to the History Center for all the amazing work you guys do. I love that place. So I'm always, always happy. And it's always a treat to talk to everybody from there.
We'll be back soon.
Yeah.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
The second interview is with Michael Rose, Chief Mission Officer and Executive Vice President for Collections and Exhibitions.
So, first off, will you tell us exactly what it is you do at the Atlanta History Center?
I have the title of Chief Mission Officer and Executive Vice President for Collections and Exhibitions. And what I like to tell people is I get to do the fun stuff. So as Mission Officer, I'm involved with the mission of the organization, which is everything from historic gardens to our research center, all of our collections, be that photographs or documents, artifacts, three-dimensional objects, living collections like the gardens and the animals at Smith Farm. And we develop the product, as it were, for the public, and that can be exhibitions and a wide variety of other visitor experiences. But that's why I say I get to do the fun stuff. I work with very creative people, very dedicated in conducting research and developing what that experience is going to be.
So right now, you are heading up a really interesting project, which is why I wanted to talk to you today, called the Corona Collective. Will you tell us what that is?
The mission of the institution is to collect, preserve, interpret, and provide access to the stuff of history. And so much of the focus of historical agencies like the Atlanta History Center is often seen as acquiring historical, quote unquote, artifacts that in one sense may already be understood as being old by people, and family photographs, business records, and artifacts associated normally with a variety of people, places, and events. And many people see these in relationship to collecting in order to document large events, such as the Vietnam War, the Olympic Games, or to document significant social change, like the civil rights movement, the suffrage movement, or, you know, quote unquote, gay rights. And in addition, institutions also collect the more mundane items, documenting the sort of essence of the daily life. And these are artifacts that are the most ephemeral, and to what extent one thinks about their importance in understanding what it means to really live in a moment in time. And these are the things that are normally disposed of because they're used up and thrown away. And so looking at this particular point in time, we have a large event happening now that, and I think everybody agrees, will signify a social change. We're living in a new world, right? So we look at this as an opportunity to conduct contemporary collecting. And that, in a sense, is predicting the future, because instead of collecting what's old, we're collecting what we think the future will think is old. And that can be difficult. So you attempt to do it in a way that somebody in the future can make a decision. You tend to overcollect in order to ensure that you have the adequate material that somebody in the future, in a number of years, can determine whether or not something actually does have cultural significance in some way. At this moment in time, what we decided to do was this Corona Collective is crowd collecting. And because in one aspect, we can't go out ourselves as staff of the Atlanta History Center to fulfill our mission to collect the cultural material of our community. So we're looking upon the community to help us do that. And so we established this online. It's at atlantahistorycenter.com, Corona Collective, to allow the public to upload material in a variety of formats onto our website to help us collect the material in this moment in time. And I think that the one thing is that looking on this, because mobile devices are what we live with. And what I was telling one person was that isolated as we are at this moment in time with the pandemic, that those mobile devices are how we are communicating one to another through a variety of virtual platforms to have meetings, and with our phones to take photographs and to communicate with friends through a variety, again, of online platforms like Facebook and Instagram and others. And so, as I said to somebody, this is how I live. This is how I communicate, this is how I survive. Because at this moment in time, it's that social media, it's that social mobile platform that allows us to reconnect to the world from this isolated pandemic space that we're all in, right? And we can use all of that material that everybody is living with to document what's happening. And so we're providing a platform on our website for people to upload this material to help us document, like I say, this moment in time, this pandemic. And so that's what the Corona Collective is. It's crowd collecting for contemporary collecting in order to document life as it is right now. And that includes, quote unquote, major things like that you would think of, such as the restrictions by state and local governments and things like that. But it's that what I refer to as that mundane documentation of our daily lives. Well, let me just say that this is the online component is only part of the initiative. Because in addition to that, the staff is still going out on their own, social distancing and wearing masks, to document this with their own mobile devices and in other ways, and collecting artifacts that we know that we want to keep. So we're keeping a list of those artifacts that we can collect now, that we can collect after the restrictions are lifted and we're able to get out again. And we're also asking certain individuals in different professions or fields to document their experiences as well. My niece is a nurse in a hospital. I have a nephew who is a firefighter. So we're talking to first responders and asking them to specifically document their experiences. We have one young man who was an intern at the Atlanta History Center, and he had been called up to the National Guard and assigned to Charlotte to help locate possible sites in Charlotte for temporary hospitals. So he is documenting his experience as well. But in this collecting, getting back to the mundane part, I joke with someone about, you know, at some point there will be an exhibition about all of this. And I can envision in this gallery space at the Atlanta History Center, the display case with the bonnet, the glass bonnet on top of it. And inside with the light shining out from above is a roll of toilet paper, because that is one of the symbolic items of this, a bottle of hand sanitizer, homemade masks. These are the sorts of things that we're thinking about collecting, because they are so symbolic of what we're all living with right now.
Oh, that sounds actually kind of amazing.
And I'm going to stop right there.
I'm picturing someone from the future stumbling into that section of a display and just being like, toilet paper? What is this about? But boy, has it been an important part of this experience for a lot of people. And you're right, it is a symbol of all of this that we don't necessarily think of in that way. Everyone's concerned about having it, but we really don't think about how that is going to be a touchstone of the descriptors of this many, many years from now. You mentioned that your staff is going out and, you know, practicing safe practices, but collecting artifacts. What kind of artifacts are they collecting?
Well, they are actually collecting the toilet paper and the hand sanitizers. You know, we're lucky in Atlanta to have a series of distilleries. And so I don't know if you're aware, but some of the distilleries in town have turned to making hand sanitizers from the alcohol that they have at their disposal. And so they're putting that hand sanitizer that they're creating into pump bottles, and they're branding them with their distillery name. And so we're collecting that sort of artifact. And I do have one staff member. She didn't have to leave her house to collect this because she had it in her house. And she has promised to donate the teddy bears that she placed in her window that are you aware of the, that placing teddy bears, because that activity in neighborhoods is something that kids can get out of the house and go around, and it becomes a hunt to find the teddy bears, right? Other people have been putting, homemade paper hearts in their windows and things like that. So that's the sort of thing that at this point in time we're looking to collect, in addition to creating a larger list of what we might be looking for as well that we can't access at this point in time.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Now, you also mentioned specifically like that you're documenting our local and state government advisories, et cetera. I know there are other institutions doing similar projects. Has there been any discussion with the Atlanta History Center, with other institutions, about sharing this kind of information or creating a more massive collective? Or do you think there will be at some point, you know, some cooperative effort to combine these things to make a fuller picture of life in the U.S.?
We're certainly aware of the larger effort by other institutions to also document the coronavirus pandemic. And those are all being done in a variety of ways. I'm aware of the Historic New Orleans collection is using an automated system to collect tweets. And so they have advised people to use a particular hashtag so that it would be easier for their system to identify and collect those for their system. Other institutions are asking people to simply send them an email and let them know what they have and let the staff contact them again. The Indiana Historical Society is doing something very similar to what we're doing in allowing the public to upload a variety of formats for digital content. We've received about close to 150 individual donations and over 400 digital files. And that can be everything from a written document that is uploaded, and that can be a description from somebody who has suffered from the virus, or someone who is caring for somebody who is suffering from the virus, to poetry and other formats, and videos and photographs. So it's been a wide variety of content that we have been receiving. There's not an essential coordinated effort between institutions. I don't think at this particular point in time that any of us are competing one against another. We do try to talk to other institutions in the Atlanta area to ensure sometimes that if we're collecting in a particular subject area, or if you think of a community or neighborhood, that we're not competing in some way. But I don't think at this particular point in time with this subject matter, with the corona, that we're competing in any way. But I think that in the future, if there's ever an effort for us or other institutions to have programming, certainly with exhibitions and with developing other product, as I refer to it, for the visitor experience, there's always the opportunity to find out what somebody else has and to borrow that for an exhibition or access photographs or, you know, textual content or something like that to add it to whatever we're doing.
Very cool. What is going to happen to all of these materials once they're submitted?
The Corona Collective on our website is, as I mentioned, is one part of a larger initiative to document the coronavirus pandemic. The material that's supplied online by the public is uploaded, and we have to go through the technical aspects. There's a release form that everybody has to complete, and anyone under 18 has to have permission signed by parents. Anything that's uploaded becomes the property of the Atlanta History Center, allow us to use, and we don't guarantee to use or save absolutely everything, but it does become part of the collection of the Atlanta History Center. And in two ways, we preserve that for our own use in exhibition or online content, as well as part of our research collection, also making that available to the public to be able to access, to use for research or other methods, so that if somebody was using, if somebody was creating a documentary about the pandemic and they were looking at Atlanta, they could come to the Atlanta History Center, they could review these materials, and they could possibly use any of this content in creating a documentary. And I use that as just one example of how the public might be able to access this material and use it themselves, working with the Atlanta History Center in some format, in addition to the History Center using it as the institution.
So I have to ask, do you have a favorite item that has been submitted so far?
That's the hard one, because they're all great. Just getting the submissions has been rewarding, that the people are doing this. And frankly, we've been very, very pleased with the response that this has received. One thing that we haven't received yet is that we are working with a local school, and the students have been assigned a project to create their own digital journals to be able to supply. We haven't received those yet, but I think up to 60 students have been tasked with doing this. I look forward to seeing that. I think that at this point in time, probably the thing that was most moving for me was one of the very earliest donations that we received. And that was simply the story of a woman who had the virus. And she discussed the difficulty she had in obtaining medical assistance, in getting a test to find out if she actually had the virus, and then her description of suffering through it. And she recovered and supplied this to us. It's a moving document to read and to understand the loneliness of this. And that's another aspect that my niece, who I mentioned earlier, is a nurse, and her discussion of the fact that people are dying alone, and she has to be there and help those people because family and friends can't be there with them in this pandemic, and how difficult that is for people to suffer through.
It's interesting because I wonder if all of these people who contribute, surely they have some sense of it, but if they really realize how incredibly important and meaningful all of this is going to be down the road, when these are really like the truest words you could speak are those of someone experiencing a moment. It's fascinating to me. And I hope they understand the gravity of just contributing.
Well, I hope they do. The fact that they are taking that effort to make this documentation to help us with this is meaningful. I think that one aspect, again, is that the fact that these are the voices of the people who are living at this moment in time. And so many people think of history as being names, dates, and places and events. And it's not about memorizing those facts. It's about understanding how people lived and the relevance of that to our lives today. Having more voices that can represent that experience just adds to the complexity and understanding of history. And so, yes, this will be in the past, and somebody in the future will be making a decision about what to keep or not to keep from our contemporary collecting. But they'll have a wealth of material to choose from a wide variety of people. And I think that's a very important aspect.
So last question, do you stay pretty objective about it, or do you have a hope of how all of this will be seen in 100 years, 150 years, et cetera? Do you think about the legacy of the work you're doing right now, or is that too heady?
That's a hard one.
Sorry.
That's okay. I think about this as it's my job. And so I do it. But that's not to say that it becomes a humdrum daily exertion or something, because what we do, we understand, the people that I work with, that it's a mission and it's a cause. And I think that despite the day-to-day aspects of a job, we know that the job we're doing is rewarding, and we know that it serves a purpose. Let me give one example, and that's from our Veterans History Project, which is an ongoing oral history project that we have in documenting the experience of veterans in a variety of conflicts. And obviously one of those is World War II. And at this point in time, so many of the veterans from World War II are dying. And so we're working diligently at this point in time to document as many as we can. We have had a few experiences recently in which some veterans who had been interviewed in the last few years had passed away. And we have received communication from family members, children, grandchildren, who then came across the recordings because the veterans get a copy of their interview. And we get that response from family members about how much that means to them to have that voice telling that story. And so we work at this day to day, but we understand the importance of it. And I can tell you, it's a very rewarding job that we do. So
one day people will be talking about the remaining people who lived through this moment in time, and we'll have this amazing collective that you guys have put together. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Michael, thank you so much for sitting with me today and being so patient with all of our technical issues and just being a delight and sharing your knowledge with us. It's really important. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
One of the really unique aspects of this set of interviews is how both Sheffield and Michael spoke about the social change that was likely to come from living through the pandemic. But of course, little did any of us know when we were having these talks that just weeks away was an entirely different and very profound moment of potential for social change. So it is almost a historically interesting thing in terms of looking at recent history, because we see how quickly our mindset shifted from focusing on this one thing to a whole other set of things that now are compounding together.
So thanks again to the Atlanta History Center and to Sheffield and Michael for taking the time with Holly, and to Howard Pausner, who's their manager of media relations, who helped Holly get these talks arranged and scheduled. You can check out what's happening currently at the Atlanta History Center at atlantahistorycenter.com. And you can participate in their crowdsourced Corona Collective by visiting atlantahistorycenter.com/research/corona-collective.
And the History Center has also been doing some really good virtual programming throughout the shutdown. If you are listening to this episode on the day it comes out, which is June 15th, 2020, there is actually a virtual talk scheduled tonight with Stacey Abrams that is sure to be really amazing. If you want to get in on that, go to their page and search for it. I think it's on their front page right now. You do have to make an online purchase of her new book to get access to that event. That's kind of like what your ticket becomes. And you end up getting a signed book, I think, in the mail. But check that out for more details. And again, I super want to thank Howard and Sheffield and Michael all for helping us put together this picture. It's I am very excited at the prospect of their exhibit with a roll of toilet paper front and center with a spotlight on it that Michael talked about. I also have listener mail, which is related. And this listener didn't really want me to necessarily mention their name. They said that they were shy, but they wanted to bring to our attention a cool project that is going on. I will read their email in part, and hopefully that will be cool, and they will not mind. They write, longtime listener, first time writer. Thank you so much for keeping us informed and entertained during this challenging time. I was really excited to hear you discuss the Corona Collective project at the Atlanta History Center, because there is a similar COVID-19 journaling project at the Wisconsin Historical Society, which this person has some connections to. And they write, I know that museums and historical societies around the world have similar projects in the work right now. And I feel so proud and inspired by how historians, archivists et al. Are using their resources to keep people engaged and help document history as it happens. So there's more to this letter. But as I said, they didn't want to really be called out for it. But I want to make sure that anyone who is listening checks out wisconsinhistory.org. If you want to go to their COVID-19 big history landing page, that is wisconsinhistory.org/big history is happening. And then you can also search around on their site because they also have a journal project that's going on, as well as a poster project that's going on that you can check out. And it's really, really cool. You know, Michael also mentioned an effort going on in New Orleans. We mentioned when we talked about all of this before, like, check out your local history museums who are probably doing similar things, or their historical societies that probably have similar projects in the works, and make sure that you participate if you want to, because this is going to be a really cool thing for future historians and researchers to have access to so that they know what regular people were actually thinking and doing as they lived through all of this.
Yeah.
If you would like to write to us, you can do so at historypodcast@iheartradio.com. You can also find us everywhere on social media as Missed in History. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, we would be delighted to have you. You can do that on the iHeartRadio app, at Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is you listen.
Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.